This is Recordix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode, another edition of What Has Berenger Done Now? Well, that'll be later. It's Rack Addicts After Hours, of course. Episode 114, the numbers keep climbing. And thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Ben. Peter's here with me. And there's lots of synth news, but we'll be there later. First, we shall start with a warm bath of... What have you been doing this week, Pete?
Right, I have been refitting my Queen of Pentacles, my
endorphin
Queen of Pentacles, back into the black system, which I'm thinking I'm going to be calling the Scarab.
The Scarab.
No, that works.
Keeping on insect theme there.
Yeah, nice. The Scarab. With your drums back. So, all functioning as you expected?
Yes, but it does really go to show how boutique these modules can be. Because this one sounds different to the previous one.
Oh, how so?
Well, everything's just calibrated differently.
Mm-hmm.
So the various different controls on the drum voices behave slightly differently. I'm used to exactly at what point on the turn of the potentiometer a certain cadence or sound would emanate, and it's all changed, and it's just seems to be tonally slightly different for some reason.
Not in a bad way?
No, I just need to fettle around until I get the best out of it.
But gotcha.
I wonder if it's a Rev 1.1 or something like that. It's because mine I got 6 months ago or so, and if you notice, it's got a completely different filter knob.
Is that the big one?
Yes,
the big one. Was the other one like the ones they have on, similar to the ones they have on Chaos Devices stuff?
Well, it was sort of flanged. It had like a big skirt on it, and now they've gone for a more contemporary looking knob. I know the knob doesn't really change how it sounds, but there's something different. As I say, it was a fresh one out the box.
Looks pretty sleek.
Yeah. So I'm getting there, but it's, as I say, I had an impression, or I got used to how the previous one sounded, and this one just sounds slightly different. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something there. But I'll tweak away until I've got it sounding the best it can. Other than that, it went straight in because the wiring was all set in looms, and so I just unplugged what was going into the drum voice unit itself, and then everything just went straight back in.
Awesome. But the Scarab is whole.
The Scarab is whole.
Awesome.
I think I'm going to do a bit of a redesign before it actually emerges into public view.
Just a rearrange for ergonomics.
No, I think I'm going to possibly lose the chainsaw and that side of things, because I'm just not... I can use it, and it does sound great, but not necessarily in that configuration. So I'm just working out whether I can have a reconfiguration. I have got a new plan up on Modular Grid that accommodates a few other modules by removing ones that are sort of currently redundant as we speak. But yes, it's all back together. I have had several noodles on it. Unfortunately, you know, it's like you get something back together, you don't always have the time to engage with it as soon as it's come. So it was a few days until I started tweaking. But the main thing, it's back. The guys at Endorphins did me proud, as we said last week, considering the sort of stresses and strains they're under with the various situations going on around the world. And they still managed to get me the unit pretty promptly. So I'm really, really thankful for that. So pretty much that's been my week.
That's been the whole thing. Well, other than a new 28mm lens for the film camera, which I'm quite excited about, I went on the best brewery tour I've ever been on. So how many brewery tours? I must have done five or more in various places, because if there's a local brewery somewhere, it's just kind of nice. This one is near my parents. It's the Hook Norton Brewery in Hook Norton in the Cotswolds somewhere. And it was super cool. I think the most similar brewery that I've been to would be Shepherd Neame in Faversham, in terms of the style of beers and stuff. It's just old ales and things. But what was super cool about this was actually the architecture of the building. Started in the late 1700s, I think, and it was all designed to be used, or designed to take the most advantage of gravity. So it's really, really tall, and everything will kind of go from one stage to the other by going through a different floor. There's the original steam engine operating in the basement. They don't actually use it, but it still works. They test it every week or something. But they're one of three brewers in the country still delivering by horse-drawn cart, which is great. But no, it was good fun. Good fun, a really fun building. Took some pictures as well, and we'll see how they go.
So would I be right in assuming they've got a team of Shire horses tucked away somewhere?
Big Shire horses, yes indeed. I think they're not delivering at the moment because one of them retired, got a bit too old. He's still kicking around, just not working these days. They're seeking out some more. But I'm not a horse person. I'm not a fan of big animals. Cows really freak me out. I don't like going near them. They were intimidating beasties. They're huge, absolutely monstrous.
Yeah, Shire horses are very big.
Very handsome looking things, but large, big muscles. Don't want to get too close. So that was interesting.
So do they only supply to local pubs
only
in the area?
Only three that they do with the horses, but they're basically worldwide otherwise.
Okay, and that's just for, I would imagine, to...
History.
Yeah, so...
Preservation.
It's all part and parcel of the kind of the ambience they're trying to create, especially with the tours. Yeah. You know, that oldie worldy.
Definitely, and Cotswolds is full of sort of semi-isolated tiny villages, and it's definitely part of that vibe. It was good fun. Now, it's time for another edition of What's Behringer Done Now? And it is What's Behringer Done Now because there are knockoffs to talk about. Where do you want to start, Pete? Because there's three of them. Can you name the three?
No, I can't.
No.
I just haven't been looking. You tell me all about them.
Right. Yes. The first is the Moog Taurus, or the Moog Taurus, the classic bass pedal machine, which, given that it's going into what looks like one of the bigger desktop units, it's a very empty front panel.
Yes, it is rather, isn't it?
Not a huge amount going on. It's got your preset buttons and octave switching or whatever it is down the bottom. And it's a Moog Taurus. So that's cool if you like your bass stuff. I'm sure it will sound fine. There we go. They've ripped that one off. It will turn up in a million years because parts shortages and such.
How are you supposed to use it? I didn't see any pedals to go with it.
Nope, just MIDI, standard MIDI stuff. And I know Studio Logic make pedals if you really want to do that thing. But I feel like if you're going for actual bass pedals because you want those to either perform with or have, you're probably going to go and get at least a mini tour and a controller or seek an original.
Yeah, the originals are pretty expensive.
They will be, will be. Ooh, or probably equally expensive is that Dreadbox one that they made with the Tweed. I think I showed it to you in a podcast at one point.
I don't recall. So I'm trying to remember with the Taurus, is it a two octave foot key bed?
I think it's
affair.
Just
fair.
It's one, just one octave.
Just one octave.
Yeah, I'm sure there were special editions that were more notes. But you get classic filter, two VCOs, five octave range. It's a mix fader between the oscillators, which is kind of interesting. You can polychain it if you felt like it. You know, it's the standard stuff. It's not the most exciting synth, but the classic did have... Well, there's the legends that accompanied it, like when prog bands were sound checking and they'd rattle glasses off the bar at the back, that kind of thing, with the thunderous low end, apparently. I don't know if it's true. Next is the Oberheim two-voice copy. So it's got a couple of SEM-like things in there. Mr. Oberheim has been making these, hasn't he?
Yes, he
has. Relatively recently.
And he also... did something with the name to ensure it couldn't be used recently as
so
well.
So they've called this one the 2-XM, which, yep, that doesn't really... Ooh, ooh, oh. Infringements, hello. The Behringer version on each of the two voice parts, the SEMs, it does say synthesizer expander module on the top, but I don't know that he could have trademarked that in any reasonable way. But
rather generic. I think it's just the Oberheim name. Have you got a picture there?
Yeah, yeah. It's the same eggshell-ish cream that you'd be expecting.
Okay, but it's in the SCIF format, not like a great big two voice.
Yeah, all of these first three are anyway, and this one, it's not exactly a copy of something that's in production, because you can't really just go out and buy an actual Oberheim two voice. You sort of can, but yeah, difficult process. But the third one is interesting because it's absolutely a clone of something that is very modern and currently in production, which which, have they done that before?
They've done it with the Arturia Keystep.
Ooh, the Keystep, yes. It's slightly different with, like, the K2, where Korg have their own version of the original, if you see what I mean. But so, yeah, whatever they called the Keystep. The Keystep clone, that thing, and they've gone after the Moog grandmother.
Okay.
And they say, oh yes, it's just they're copying the vintage circuits, which I guess to some extent they've already played around with the modular range, but it's got the Jolly Rancher colour scheme going on, which I think that's what Milo Melody's called it, the Jolly Ranchers. The more they do this with currently produced stuff, the dodgier it seems. Yes, there isn't a spring reverb in there. It's just a digital emulation, which is sure to break as soon as you look at it. But there we go. It's the same kind of vibe. What do you think about that, Pete?
Do we have any numbers for any of these, or are just these are teasers?
They are all kind of that $299 mark, and all of them will be subject to the parts will turn up in some years.
So we might see these by the end of the year?
Maybe. Who knows,
possibly.
Really?
Still haven't seen the OBXA that we're working on.
Maybe. that some of that will appear shortly, but no, not the full poly module yet. What else do we know? The CS80 and the ARP Odyssey, not the ARP Odyssey, the ARP. What's the really big keyboard one?
The 2500.
No.
Big keyboard one.
Looks like an Odyssey, but it's huge.
Oh, is it
Genesis
one? The polyphonic thing?
Yeah. It had a string synth and a mono synth and a poly synth in it.
I just cannot think what it was
that's
called.
That's going to annoy me. I'm going to look it up.
A vintage synth explorer at it.
Yeah, that's the one. ARP. Oh, the Quadra. They did say they were doing the Quadra at one point, whether they will continue to, because not many people are going to want one, I assume, apart from me. Anyway, interesting stuff. The other sort of two-ish sections that we need to talk about is a couple of sort of ranges. We mentioned the really little PCB-etched touch plate keyboard tiny module things. There's one there called the UB1 Spirit, which is Oberheim flavoured, so potentially they've just grabbed the oscillators from the OBXA that they've been making and chucked it in there. This one is two DCOs and a four-pole filter analog in that tiny $49 thing, one of these.
Okay.
So that one's happening. It's got your blue pinstripes, as you would expect for something poly-Oberheim flavoured, I guess.
So is that analog?
Mm-hmm. It's got those Curtis chips in it.
Okay, and how many voices did you just say?
I think it's just one voice, but two oscillators.
Okay, so it's monophonic.
Mm-hmm. Unlike the other one, which was hybrid, I think. So there is another form factor, I suppose, in that kind of corner, which it does seem they're targeting both the Korg Volkers and the Roland Boutique stuff. So they've also got the Saturn Soul, which is a Roland Jupiter 8 synth voice in a box. Now, architecture on this one, it is a paraphonic monosynth, three notes that you can play, but the filter is supposedly another analog equivalent to the Jupiter filter. That's one with the slightly more advanced looking touch plate keyboard like the Sculpt, which we were talking about last episode. And they also have the Model D Soul in that same format, $99, and it's just a very small Model D in a box, all analog, that one. So I guess they've just crammed the Euro rackable Model D into a teeny tiny form factor. These are all USB powerable and susceptible to noise, probably, because of that. Though Behringer have said they're going to swap out the micro USBs on some of the designs to C instead of that flimsy old connector. So there they are. They will be available at some point, and some of them might sound okay. Now, the last one is more interesting for me personally, because there's, what's his name? I'm going to try and pronounce it right first time. Hiroki Nishijima. He was the chap that originally designed the MS-20, as far as I know. And there's some conflicting information that I've been trying to get to the bottom of after talking about it on the ModCaf Discord. So, this one is called the Hiro Tribe. Hiro is part of Hiroki Nishijima's name, and tribe being monotribe. And in all of the articles I've seen, that's two of them, he's credited as being the guy who designed the monotribe for Korg But as far as I was aware, it was actually Tatsuya Takahashi who did that, who's one of my favourite synth people because he did the Monologue, the Minilogue, the Volkers, and the Monotribe. So I'm confused. If Tatsuya Takahashi designed it, then maybe you could call it Behringer ripping it off. But if it's Hirokai Nishijima, then is he just finishing his own product? I don't really know. Either way, it's a monosynthy groove box thing. It's got a three-voice drum part in there. Let me check. Ooh, two DCOs. That's going to be an expansion on the original, which just had one very simple analog oscillator, bass, snare, and hi-hats, and sequencing. The Monotribe has a special place in my heart because it was the first synth I ever kind of lusted after. I think after originally seeing and being vaguely interested in the... what's that dope for one? The Dark Energy. So I do actually want to play with one of these when they eventually turn up.
I'm sure we'll start seeing this stuff before the end of the year, I would imagine. Unless they've particularly stated that, but these look like finished...
All of them look very like finished prototypes and ready to hit a factory somewhere.
Yeah, ready to go into production. Unless they are going to be struggling for semiconductors.
Only time will tell. Well, listeners, find us on social media and let us know which, if any, of the Behringer new releases that you're excited to find and play with and listen to and watch on YouTube. Because I think this is the only one for me, the Hero Tribe. We'll find out more soon. And with that, Behringer is behind us.
Okay.
Hooray.
I just wanted to bring something up which occurred to me after we were sort of contemplating the grim happenings in Ukraine.
Mm.
And it also occurred to me that because of all these sanctions, I wonder how it's going to affect Soma Labs.
Yeah, I forgot we actually had a company that we like in Russia.
Mm. So I think if things proceed as they are and stay like this, they are going to struggle unless they maybe move lock, stock and barrel out of Russia into Europe. But you know, who knows what their plans are.
That is a good point.
It's going to mean that the supply is going to dry up and the units that do exist in other locations rather than Russia are going to
become
rare.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good point. It's one of those things when you're considering Russia as a whole, and I imagine everybody in the world is going to think they're the bad guys right now. But then we just remembered, actually, we do know people, not personally, but we have people that we know and like. And then you remember that there are the individuals outside of the whole country and you're rooting for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sort of general consensus in the West that it's not the Russian people that we have a problem with.
Absolutely not. On the Soma Labs front, Ian, I think, was actually in contact with, is it Vlad Kramer? Kramer, is that the guy?
Possibly. I've had communications when I got my kit for the Lyra 8, but I'd have to look through my email records to remember who I was talking to at the time.
Yeah, that is the chap, Vlad Kramer. I'll probably get it wrong, because Ian had a dastardly plan. He has a Lyra. In fact, now he has two Lyras.
Greedy.
Yeah, greedy. Maybe he was... maybe he was thinking what you were thinking and he's stocking up. But he's partnering with friend of the ModCaf and very talented maker of the EDP Wasp replicas that are available online, Jason, to change the tuning controls on one of the new Lyras he's got for those 10-turn lockable potentiometers for, I suppose, flexibility, ease of use, and potentially a bit more convenience when playing live. Ease of tweaking for proper fine tuning.
When you say lockable, are those the ones that look like they're on safes?
Yeah, they look like little safe combination locks with the little lever on the side and stuff.
So you can set them and then flick the lever and lock them in that.
In theory, they won't be nudged. I can't wait to see it. But he, Ian, I think, got in contact with Vlad and said, hey, is this a good idea? And Vlad just went, yes, do it. That sounds amazing. So, and that's one thing you do always notice with Soma is they're really active and enthusiastic with their support and on Facebook and social media and such. Great company.
Is Vlad the original or the originator of the design?
I think he's the main man. Yeah, I think.
Wasn't he
potentially chief designer?
Artistic performer of some description, some sort of artist?
I mean, given the instruments that they come up with and some of the blurbs on their website, definitely artistic performer, a little bit hippie type situation.
So I suppose it's a watch this space situation.
Indeed.
See how it unfolds. Are there any other Russian manufacturers you can think of?
There's a few that I don't know. I'm going to quickly Google.
Apart from Polyvox, but I don't know what the scenario is there.
I was just checking with Industrial Music Electronics because I know there was something related. No. So it's actually they were just collaborating with a chap, the guy who made the Polyvox. There is one really small brand that I'm just going to look for that make some kind of, not massively functional, but esoteric and really fun modules using Nixie tubes and stuff. So obviously just for the vibe, I think they're called Paratech, if I'm thinking of the right one. Yes, I am. Yes, indeed. So Paratech, designer of really weird little modular bits and pieces, but super cool. Definitely in the hobbyist turned basement business kind of corner of the Eurorack world, the one-man band, which is really cool. So, I mean, they're based on Soviet Nixie tubes that are still being produced, or new old stock, I assume. So not one that many people know about, I think, but potentially that could be problematic if you're wanting some Paratech goodness in your life.
Well, let's hope these Russian manufacturers can, I don't know, circumnavigate these issues without being too heavily affected or without contravening some sort of sanction.
Yeah, I mean, neither Soma Labs nor the very small Paratech are a huge company that would have more options potentially for surviving this kind of thing. So fingers crossed.
Okay.
Okay, two modules, Eurorack modules, lovely stuff, from two brands that I'm interested in. I'm interested in both. They're on the radar, as it were. What do you want to do first, Pete? Do you want to have multi-effects or strange oscillators?
You decide. Just hit me up with whatever you feel you
here
need to
we
go first with.
So, have you heard of Western Precision Audio?
No, I haven't.
Neither had I. So, this is a pretty cool looking beastie called the TSO, Time Segment Oscillator. So, it's an oscillator, and it looks like it has a sequencer or a graphic EQ or something in there, and it is a draw-your-own-waveform oscillator, which is pretty cool. And since it's 12 segments, and you might have tried this before if you've ever got an analog step sequencer and put an audio rate clock into it, you can have an interesting tone come out the other side. This is sort of that idea, but expanded upon. Of course, it will have proper pitch tracking, and if you slow it all the way down, it will also function as a sequencer. But you can kind of make your own 12-bit waveforms, but they're all sort of analog at the same time because of the generation, but digital because of steps. Weird. So you have a couple of extra handy features. You can make presets once you've saved some interesting timbres. You have an extra sub-oscillator in there as well. And you have a couple of modulation buses that you can select per segment to get some really interesting tones. I'm going to play you a few bits from, there's a demo. Whose channel is this? This is on the channel Danielle. And audio examples, here we go. There's some of that. But it sounds really cool, and not one of those ultra multi-purpose modules anywhere near the flexibility of maths, but cool to have a 12-step sequencer that's also an oscillator. Cool
so
idea.
Could you record it as a whole voice, or what's it need?
No filter or anything. So yeah, filter VCA, envelopes if you want them.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
Still quite an interesting thing.
An interesting idea, and quite visual as well, which I think is quite nice. If you pair it with a scope, it would be quite cool to use as a bit of a teaching aid, potentially.
So do you think you'll get one?
I'm really tempted. I mean, I wish you could get it as a kit, but I think it's about $320 as a pre-built thing. But right. Still,
yeah.
It's kind of a mid-range oscillator in terms of price. Maybe a bit over mid-range. Either way, I think it's really interesting. That's the Western Precision Audio Time Segment Oscillator. Cool stuffs. Now, the second module is from ALM Busy Circuits, who we do like. It is a 6HP stereo digital multi-effects processor called MFX with a little teeny tiny screen on it, and it can also be an oscilloscope, which is quite cool. Just a very, very small screen. Very, very small oscilloscope.
Tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yes, indeed. One of those clicky infinite encoders for finding your preset, I guess. And you've got three CV inputs and a clock, as well as obviously the stereo in and out. And you've got a digital PCM echo, a tape-style one, crumbular echo, which is a slightly weird granular-flavoured thing, Ursa Minor echo verb, pocket PL8 verb, which is classic 80s digital. What's that company that I've forgotten the name of? Famous for hardware reverbs. Lexicon.
Okay, I was going to say Lexicon.
Them's the ones. Almicon, I don't know. And then Quadra, just various reverb types. You also have a compressor, which is side-chainable should you want, or as a mixed bus compressor. It's got all of your classic controls, threshold ratio, makeup gain, and all that kind of stuff, which you don't often get on analog-styly ones in the Eurorack format. A transient shaper, which is kind of cool. A digital distortion, a bit-reducing machine, modulatable stereo panning device, ring and frequency modulation, and an ensemble effect. And they sound pretty cool. It'd be interesting to see if somebody does an effects aid shootout. That'd be what I'd like to know.
Do we have a number for this one?
Let's have a look. Will they give it to us in Great British Pounds? No, they won't. Not on this website. $299 USD. ALM on their website. Do they have a price for it? Let's find out. Aha! Rubberdub already has it in stock, apparently. No, they don't. That's Google lying to me. £239. That's a decent price. What's the FX aid? That's going to be interesting.
Or if you can hold out to the Brighton Modular Summer meet up at the East Sussex University. They normally have it. If it's on this year, you can see the man in person and buy one from him.
In cash for a bit of a discount, hopefully. The regular effects aid is 178 from Juno, and the big one is 214. So smidge more for the ALM, but I do want to check out a bit of a comparison on that front.
I have both of those effects aids now.
Oh, you've got the little and the big one.
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. The little one in there is the big one next door.
Yes.
Fair enough. What do you get in the big one extra?
You get more modulation opportunities.
Oh, yeah. More space for the jacks.
It's the same presets.
Gotcha. Yeah, it just depends what you want, I suppose. Right, the last one is kind of cool. Probably not something for my corner of the world, but interesting nonetheless. Squarp, or Squarp, instruments from France, makers of the Hermod and the Pyramid and the Rample, I think, the Eurorack module. They've got a big old sequencer exceptionnel called Hapax, or Hapax, or something like that, H-A-P-A-X, which is a dual project multi-track sequencer that does MPE, and I assume will have a workflow similar to the Pyramid and Hermod, which I think are quite well regarded and quite flexible in, I think, the way that you set up kind of track lengths and loops and segments and stuff, so you don't have to just go, okay, here's a bar of eight or whatever. I think it's quite easy to get weird with your overlapping free-running sequences on it.
I have seen this one. I watched the Red Means Record video on it.
Do you want to take this one away? Because all I know is it looks pretty cool and it's big.
I didn't get that far into the video.
Yes.
It was late and the eyelids started drooping after a while.
If you're not seriously interested in them, sequencer videos can be a bit dull, can't they?
It looked very capable.
Mm. And a deluge style RGB grid matrix.
It's a big old beastie for a desktop, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in relation to anything else, so I don't know what it's like.
I would imagine it's quite a pricey unit.
Quite likely. There it is. Oh yeah, actually relatively compact from what I was expecting. Yeah, that could mean it's very expensive. So actually quite comparable to the deluge in terms of size. I might have a look at that video, actually. Red Means Recording, we may well have officially recommended him in a at the end of the podcast, but if you haven't found him before, he's a good guy, is Red Means Recording. And yeah, he's got a demo of the Hapax. If you're looking for something super capable and quite flexible in timings and things, Squarp Hapax. And that will be the end of the modular news. I will take the time to now tease that things are brewing at the ModCaf, and we may well have an update with the Ian Man himself soon, with accompanying content on the interwebs. So don't miss the next episode, or the one after that, or indeed the one after that, or even any podcast after that, because I really don't know when it might be. Now we must finish and do our miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And I'm ready to go with one, which doesn't happen all that often. The colleague, Jacob, from work, recommended a band called White Lies. They are an English band, White Lies, and there is one tune from the album, As I Try Not to Fall Apart, called I Don't Want to Go to Mars, which is quite fun, and it's been stuck in my head. It's quite a simple tune, a little bit anthemic, slightly old-school Muse-ish. Not really my scene normally, but it's a fun tune. I Don't Want to Go to Mars by White Lies. Pete, take us away.
Right, this week I've got a YouTube channel that just dropped into my stream, as it does on occasions, and this one particularly caught my eye. Now, the channel is called Max Cooper, who I'm assuming is the name of the person that runs the channel, and possibly an artist in the respect of electronica. So the channel features not an excessive number of videos. The majority of them are related to sort of electronica type recordings. But the thing that particularly caught my eye about this was the videos themselves. And it would appear that the videos are done by different video artists, but to potentially the music of Max Cooper. And the most recent ones, one about a month ago and one 2 weeks ago, were the ones I initially saw. And they are computer generated, but I think they're a bit more than that. They actually look like they might be AI generated.
Ooh, how strange.
I mean, I've seen this style of art before. It's a sort of AI graphic engine that you can access online, and I've actually used it for stills. So you can import stills, and then the AI kind of gets the stills and merges them into collages. Very strange, but these are actually animated, but they look very similar. They've got a sort of, I would say, kind of fractal nature of them, you know, the sort of graphics where you dive into them and the patterns and graphics are kind of replicated the deeper you go in.
Yeah, I'm watching the, I think this is the most, not the most recent one of the most viewed, called Repetition. It's
different.
Trippy.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely worth a watch. So if you're into your complicated graphics, interesting, or you have an interest in that type of thing and you like electronica, it's the perfect marriage. So the YouTube channel is simply called Max Cooper.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the best podcast in the world. I'm biased. It's Rack Addicts After Hours, and we hope you tune in next week. Farewell.